Welcome, welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Fantasy Baseball Podcast with your hosts, Matty Wood, Matthew Davis, and the Roto-Gut, Vlad Settler.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. This is episode 2. We're recording on the last day of January of 2023. And yeah, 2 months to go until opening day, and I'm here with my man, Matthew Matty Wood Davis. I'm Vlad Settler. Matty, what's going on, bud?
Hello. We are now only 7 weeks away from arriving to Las Vegas for our high-stakes fantasy baseball drafts. And in the meantime, we are continuously drafting. You and I just wrapped up a 400 NFBC DC. And this Thursday, we have the Beat Matty Wood NFBC Cutline Championship Draft, which is $175 to enter with the $75,000 overall grand prize. And it is the unique cutline draft. So if you're not familiar with that, it's similar to a best ball, but there are 2 free agency/fab periods along the way. And then there's a certain threshold of points that need to be scored up until the finish line there. But it is really fun. It is unique. So if you are interested in that, you can go to my Twitter profile at _MattyWood_, and there is a link to join that draft. Other than that, Vlad, continuing these DCs, right? That's kind of the process for me right now. Continuously tweaking things. I was just recently on the Pitcherless PitchCon talking to friends of ours with Rob Silver and Dave McDonald and Toby, and just hearing other people talk about their thought process and getting into the game, right? Getting everything going in the right direction to be prepared for our biggest draft. So that's where we're at right now, which is one of the most fun times of year for me. It's really enjoyable. So I'm glad to be here. Sorry for the long introduction. We do have a lot to get into, but I'm excited.
Yeah, it's I'm holding back now on my my draft champions. I've done quite enough at this point. Feel pretty good about the player pool, and I don't really need to kind of scratch that draft itch. So I think I'm gonna hold back a little bit as far as entering new ones. I did get into a 12-team online championship, drafted that. That was fun. Got that little bit out of my system. But right now it's a lot of just work at FTN Fantasy and getting all the ducks in a row, because every week I'm updating a set of different things, from the projections to the top 500 VDP that we have, the cut line, the underdog points. And so a lot of work on the back end, making sure everybody has the most up-to-date things, right? I mean, Jesus Aguilar just signed with the Oakland A's, is going to have some fantasy value. You need to be able to reflect that ASAP. You know, same thing with, just a lot of guys that moves that have been made over the last week. So check us out over there, ftnfantasy.com. If you go /MLB/tools, that's a page where you have everything. All the things that I had just named are all available at basically just like one click. So if you get a chance, bookmark that page. And just super quick as far as things that we have coming up. Obviously, Maddie's Juice versus the Squeeze, Eric Cross's Dynasty column, OVA Sassy Musings, Adam Young, future star on a lot of strategy stuff, Jake Kuchek's Prospect Vault. And I'm continuing with the NFBC positional tier series. And this week we'll be talking about the corner infielder, specifically third base and first base. But then this next week, you'll be able to read and dive in on the middle infielders, the shortstops, and the second baseman. But yeah, everything at ftnfantasy.com/MLB. And if you want, and if you don't have it, use that promo code FTNPOD. That's FTNPOD.
It's kind of interesting that you mentioned we're going to be getting into corner infielders, and then we'll dive into middle infielders. And you and I don't discuss really what you're going to be producing content-wise for the week. And, you know, I don't really discuss with you exactly what I'm going to be writing. And you put together the corner infielder piece, which is obviously more in-depth in regards to the positions itself and the tiers. And then last week I put together that shortstop of the round 6, round 7 shortstops. And then this week I'm doing something similar, but it's with second basemans from round 11 and 12. So albeit it's not the entire mother load of the position like you're tackling. I'm kind of doing the micro dive on some of these areas where we're pockets of the draft, right? We're seeing run, so to speak, of positions. And it's we're kind of following suit here, so to speak. So I like that we're lock and sync organically without too much communication.
Yeah, I like it. And also, I think maybe sometimes surprise you with the outline. So, you know, I think you usually have a clue what's coming, but we've gotten a lot better, right? Like, I think this time last year when we first getting started, and, you know, I'm a little on, maybe people don't know about me, but Maddie probably knows, obviously knows now behind the scenes that could be a little bit overly meticulous and a little bit too anal. And so, well, actually, can you even say that in 2023? I don't even know.
You can.
Okay, yes. Cool. And so the pod outline was very detailed, and a lot of times it's just not enough time, right? Like, we're usually trying to get you out of here in an hour. We're not doing those 3-hour podcast marathons, although some of them are very nice to listen to. We want to get you in and out, just kind of get to the high level facts. But there's never enough time. There's not enough time to cover. And so, you know, over time, this has developed into a little bit more sort of, you know, freestyling things. So, anyways, just a total side note there. Hope you enjoy.
Freestyling after you sent me a 4,000-word outline today, but
just throwing in the notes in there. But you know, before we dive into the corners today, the first baseman and third baseman, wanted to talk a little bit about this because we haven't had we've had some Draft Champions articles come out, and that's kind of what a lot of people are doing now. Whether you're doing that at NFBC or you're doing that at Fantrax. Those 50-round draft and holds with a player pool of 750 total. And I feel like a lot of people are in the same boat. Like, we're, for the most part, comfortable in the first 10 rounds and then a little bit less so from 11 to 30. But then you sort of have a clue of, you know, the players you like, how you want to construct as you sort of get into more drafts, as you're doing more research. But really, that sort of rounds 30 to 50, there's it's a lot of no man's land, right? There's a lot of you kind of really have to think about how you want to construct, like, how many possible saves guys do you want to get, right? Do you want to get into the, you know, the third, fourth level Shelby Millers, unsigned Matt Moores and Will Smiths of the world? Do you want to grab more rookies like the, you know, Jordan Diaz's and you know, all these you know, Westbergs and all these guys that may or may not even play this season? There's just so many ways to approach it. But I was thinking back how last season, basically nobody drafted Brandon Drury. He was drafted in the 49th, the 50th in some spots last year. And he was incredibly helpful. He was a, you know, top 40, return on value last season. You think back to the previous year, Taylor Naquin was that guy. Taylor Naquin, was a 50th round pick, basically hit 19 homers and 70 RBIs. But Drury last year, man, prior to 2022, he had never done anything remotely close. He'd never had a season over 16 homers, never had more than 500 plate appearances. And so, you know, since 2015, that had never happened. Last season was a beast of a season, 27 homers, 87 ribbies, 87 runs, earned himself a 2-year, $17 million contract with the Angels. Points leagues, people love the three-position eligibility, first, second, third, real sexy. So, you know, we're all kind of looking for that Drury, and there will be guys in those later rounds that kind of that work out for us. But we haven't done a lot of coverage of sort of who those guys are. We've dropped a few here and there in Discord, but kind of wanted to talk to you about it. First of all, how in general are you approaching those rounds? Kind of what's your, like, your hitter pitcher split? How many catchers do you want to have on the team? What's your sort of overall build in these rosters?
Usually I like to target 4 catchers in a DC in regards to roster construction, but I'm flexible to a 5th if I'm sort of backing up an option. Like, let's say I did draft a 4th round Will Smith, and in the 50th round Diego Cartea is still there. I'd be willing to take that shot just because if something were to happen to that early draft capital catcher and, you know, low scarcity position, there's potentially a somewhat upside, not that he's going to duplicate what Will Smith would do, but, you know, I'd be willing to take a 5th catcher if it was in some sort of correlation like that. But when I saw this and you were like, who's the next Brandon Drury? And you started listen, this threshold of like pick 600, I'm like scrapping at the last 3 weeks of ADP data for DCs. And I'm like, oh man, everything's becoming too recent. And, you know, players that have been signed, now their maxes are creeping up to where they're now no longer qualifying for this threshold. It's really, really difficult to give an honest opinion or answer on somebody that I think that could provide that sort of return on investment. But I was looking at some guys that were rather deep, and certainly wouldn't be drafted in your first 30 rounds of a main event or, you know, a 15 team standalone league, so to speak. So your top 450. So looking at like picks 500 plus. So I'm cheating, you know, about 100 picks here for you, Vlad. But there's a couple guys I think that are somewhat interesting, and they're all for different reasons. But like Matt Vierling, I think could get enough playing time to become interesting. Vidal Bruhan, the Rays want to make something of him, and I know that we haven't seen it yet. But I was taking a lot of speculations on him last year in round 20 to 22 in DCs, and I know that speed is real, and I think we get so tired of somebody that's supposed to be good, and if they're not great right away, we kind of just forget about them, so to speak. So I think that we don't want to forget about Vidal Bruhan just yet. I know that Franmil Reyes looked really bad, and things were weird, I think, internally with the Guardians clubhouse before he left, and the Cubs picked him up off waivers. He's still currently a free agent, but I think if an injury does occur, and if he is picked up by the right team looking for a DH, coming with a good team context and the right park factor, I think that he could sneakily be somebody that could provide you with plus above average pop, you know, in the right circumstance. And then Jesus Aguilar, you kind of brushed on a little bit there. He recently signed with the A's. We know what they're trying to do. So, but hopefully he stays healthy and just murder by volume along the way. And then if it's good enough, maybe he does go to a contending team with better team context and a better park factor. Other than those guys, and those aren't even after pick 600 now that we have a more recent sample size of ADP data, those would be some really, really late round guys, though, that I'd be somewhat interested in. Now I'll let you give the spill on the ones that you really dug deep on.
Yeah, so I did want to mention Matt Vierling because, I mean, I think at this point it looks like he's probably going to line up in a platoon to hit against lefties only. But I think with the lineup, the way that it's shaken out and the lack of depth, I think there's definitely an opportunity for him to possibly see some full-time at-bats. It's you know, we don't want to load up on too many Tigers, of course, but Vierling was not awful. Almost better of a DFS play, I guess you could say. There were definitely several times last season a bad lefty on the mound, and Vierling, I think he only had six home runs last season, but two of those came, I think, in the same game when he was hitting ninth, and I remember that one really, really well. As far as like really deep guys, I did just you know, one guy I've been drafting just over the last couple of weeks in those late rounds who actually didn't have an ADP because he wasn't being drafted at all is Luis Gonzalez of the San Francisco Giants, and he's somebody I think can walk into some playing time potentially. He had a really good camp last year and was hitting really well in the minors and earned himself a call up. He's a little bit on, you know, sort of post prospect guy, 27 years old, but he stepped up last season for the Giants, only 350 PA, but he stole 10 bags, not all that much pop. But the way that this lack of depth here lines up in the outfield, I think Luis Gonzalez is somebody who it's not one of those like flashy prospect rookies, but just somebody that could potentially grab some at bats. David Peralta, there were some rumors linked of him being signed by like the Yankees perchance. The Yankees added Rafael Ortega from the Cubs, if you remember his 2021 fame, stealing some bases there, his hot second half. He'll have a chance to crack the opening day roster, along with Willie Calhoun, a guy that we've been chasing for many years. Not sure if any of those guys play, and if Peralta actually, you know, gets signed. But I think somehow, David Peralta will be in the mix. And then one more guy that really, like, completely off the map, but man, he had a pretty, you know, pretty good solid run there for a few years. And he's, you know, he's past 30, past his prime. But Cole Calhoun, I know it was an old Dave Potts favorite, but he's 35 years old now, pretty much just a power bat against righties. He was linked to potentially signing in a couple of places. The Mariners was an option before they signed Pollock, I believe. But yeah, he was hurt for a good chunk of last season, only 400 plus plate appearances. But he's somebody that could potentially hit you 15 plus home runs in limited time, and you can platoon him rather well against righties. Any of those guys ring a bell for you? Like, what kind of situation would these guys have to land in order for them to be someone you'd be looking at?
How about David Peralta to the Blue Jays? I know that they brought in Brandon Belt and Kevin Kiermaier, but neither were expensive. Both have massive injury concerns as it is. And then when you look at their bench with Kevin Biggio and Nathan Lukes, maybe there's a potential in a couple of weeks if, you know, there's bone on bone, you know, knee injury issues already again with Brandon Belt or something like that.
Don't say
soreness. I know. Because I think this could be a really optimistic, season for Brandon Belt. It is just the perfect sprinkling. But anyways, I think you mentioned the Yankees for Peralta. That would obviously be good as well. He'd be finding himself in a platoon, a split as well, but he's on the strong side of it with the handedness being from a right-handed pitcher. So he's okay from that side. I can see, him going to the right place, similar with Cole Calhoun. Cole Calhoun, like, was really, really cold and then got really, really hot and then simmered off and got injured. You're kind of looking for lightning in a bottle in this area. I don't know if any of these guys have the full season sustainability of Brandon Drury, just because both of those guys do have the split issues. So it's tough, man. Like, Drury really was a unicorn last year. I know that, Naquin in 2021 was something similar, but man, it's you picked a really tough threshold this week, Vlad.
you know what's funny about Brandon Drury is I was listening to our friend. He joins us in the Vegas Main Events, and he's a lawyer by trade, but he's also a really good fantasy player, Daniel Prepas. I listened to his pod, his first ever guest spot. I don't know why he's ever not been a guest somewhere, but he was a guest on Bubba's pod, and man, he was dropping dimes. And one of the things I learned from him that I did not know about is that, I guess, Brandon Drury and Angels manager Phil Nevin have a long history. They know each other well. Mm-hmm. And Nevin apparently recommended him to sign with the Reds. And obviously that paid off really well.
Love it.
Now he's with the Angels. And so that's just a little intriguing nugget there.
That's kind of similar how JD Martinez ended up with the Dodgers this year.
Yep.
Similarity too.
Yep. The hitting coach, Robert Van Saayak, I believe. The pronunciation. I could be wrong.
Very nice.
I've got three guys that I wanted to throw at you. Let me know what you think. I might be missing something big here, but this guy's been slipping. And his name is Derek Hall, and he's spelled the same way as Derek Booker. Now I just butchered his name. Sorry, Bukar from NFBC. But Derek Hall, he's utility only. He has an ADP of 630. His ADP has been dropping greatly over the last couple of weeks, but he's a big-time power bat. He's a huge dude, 6'4", 230. Last season in 100 AAA games, Derek Hall hit 28 home runs and then was called up to the Phillies, I believe when Harper was hurt, and basically debuted as their cleanup hitter and was hitting bombs there early on. Obviously, he's got bad plate discipline, low walk rate, high Ks. But right now, at least against righties, he's projected a hit in the middle of the lineup. It could be like a part-time thing for him as far as being in the lineup and then as far as being up in the majors. But that's a stab I want to take late. I don't think there are a lot of power bats with 20-plus home run upside available after round 40 like that.
So I'm in agreement on the upside, take the shot at 630. That's his current ADP over the last 3 weeks. But the pushback or the two reasonings I would give as to why he's sort of going where he's going. So the first one is, we've had more drafts and more offseason news, even if it's like the Jesus Aguilars, right? A couple of those guys are going to start needling their ways up just because they signed somewhere. Like if we see Yuli Gurriel go somewhere, he's going to start trickling up just a little bit because, he's got a job. So I think that's one part of the factor. And then the other one is you did mention the poor plate discipline, low walk rate, 3.5%, high K rate, 31%. But real life, right? 282 OBP, that's not going to cut it. 36.30 swing, that's not going to cut it. 15.7% swinging strike rate. And then the contact rate's really, really bad. It's about 11% below average at 70.1%. He only had 12 plate appearances against lefties last year, so you can't really knock him for the 58.3% strikeout rate, or any of his stats really against lefties. But I think knowing what we know about platoons and splits and how teams run their front office these days and what they want to do when they pencil in their lineup card, I don't think he would see many opportunities against lefties. And then one thing, even though it was only 12 plate appearances, I've never seen a negative 64 WRC plus. I didn't know it could go.
Small sample.
No, yeah. But I just didn't even know it could get to that. But I mean, it's literally just 12 plate appearances, which is nothing. I have 12 plate appearances in my backyard. So, you know, there's some good there. You mentioned the power, the size, the upside there, which is potentially there. But it's also temporary, right? Nick Castellanos sort of becomes the DH once Bryce Harper comes back, so to speak, in a perfect world. There could be other injuries as well that occur throughout the couple of months that Bryce Harper's gone. But I think there's enough flaws for me plate discipline-wise. And that's really, for me, when I evaluate young hitters, that's really where I go. Like, you'll hear me a lot on this pod talk about outside swing rate, contact rate, swinging strike rate, walk rate, strikeout rate. It's boring, but it's just kind of how I learn to go about understanding a player's evaluation, for me at least. And he's got enough of those red flags where I get why he's going where he is. But for this practice, you're going outside the top 600. I mean, sure, there is definitely an upside that could pay off.
Yeah, and exactly. He's going to hit against righties, got some pop, and obviously he's been in the minors for so long for a reason, but he's going to be turning 28, I guess, at some point this year. And so at some point, he'll come in for Harper. Next guy here is this could just be a gut thing here, but I've been really kind of into this guy. He now has been blocked in Washington of all places, if that's even possible, by Jaime Candelario. But the man's name is Jake Alou. He's got an ADP of 690. He had a big breakout in 2022. He hit 20 home runs between AA and AAA. He increased his power, his exit velocity, everything by a few ticks and a few points from last season to this past season. He hit over 400 in the final month of the season. He also stole 20 bases. He can play a little outfield. It's not necessarily a hard roster to crack. So, don't need too much analysis on it. Just kind of throwing it out there, a guy that could potentially crack the lineup. And I guess maybe part of it has to do with how Carter Kieboom does, if you recall that name, that blaster of the past.
I do. Yeah. So I'm not great at knowing what a prospect's supposed to do or what they're going to be. Like, even later on when we talk about Vargas, it's not something that I'm just able to understand right away. I'm just not the prospect guy. But when you sent me the outline and I started to just try and scratch the surface of Jake Alou, one of the first things I noticed is, well, they just signed somebody. Washington isn't paying a lot of people. They brought in Jaime Candelario. And so I think that he is potentially blocked there. But then when you did talk about the multi-position eligibility and you look at the path to getting there, you look at the lack of talent and overall scheme, there are paths to him actually getting into the lineup and getting called up. So with the talent and what he does possess with the home run and the speed, the power, the speed upside, sure, why not? Plus 690. This is eventually in a normal league, in a 30 round 15 team league, this is, you know, free agent come call ups or May or injuries or whatever. But I think that being on Washington helps open up a quicker path.
Yes. And again, this is maybe somebody that helps you out in the second half of the season, a third baseman that might grab outfield eligibility, can possibly help you out if your roster's really in a pinch. Last guy before we jump into the tiers. This is an interesting name because he has been destroying the ball. At least he did so at AAA last season. His name is Corey Jules. He's an outfielder for the Houston Astros. And I believe there's our prospect friend, Jeff Pontus had actually mentioned him. He's been tracking him for a few years. This guy's been kind of getting the shaft. Unfortunately, he was basically gonna he was available in the Rule 5 draft, and nobody picked him up this past December. But he might have a chance to, I don't know about crack the roster, but he's gonna compete at least for a spot here. But last year in 130 games, just under 600 plate appearances, Corey Julks hit 31 homers with 22 stolen bases, drove in 89, 100 runs, and he slashed 270, 351, 503. And, you know, he's going to be a non-roster invitee to spring training, could have that chance to impress. And the thing about this outfield, although you think it's like, oh, it's the Houston Astros, it's got to be impossible to crack this lineup. Look at some of the people here that you have going on in the mix, right? Like Chaz McCormick is really nothing special. He guess he's decent defensively, but he's pretty much their everyday short center fielder at this point. You've got David Hensley on the bench, who's really only valuable because he's got versatility between the outfield and the infield. You got Jake Myers, who came up and was kind of a stud there for like the last month of the season, the playoffs, before he got hurt in 2021 and was basically a non-factor last season. And then you got Michael Brantley, who they just re-signed, who's really old, may not really have a path to opening day. So not necessarily trying to sell you, but an ADP of 734, you got some big prospect people that are on him. I've read some stuff on him over the last couple of days, whatever I can find on Twitter, and he seems intriguing. I'm not trying to say he's like your, you know, the next Jordan Alvarez or anything, but I like this kid. He's a local Houston guy too, where he played in the local, local AAA team was basically like walking distance from his house. So I like the guy. Let's see what we got.
Yeah. So I mentioned how Washington, right, being the Nationals, how crappy they are, there could be a quick path to playing time. Well, they don't even really want Jordan Alvarez to be an outfielder. And Michael Brantley being penciled in on roster resources at DH is the most optimistic thing ever, because I just don't know how much time he has left, so to speak. And then you talk about Chaz McCormick and Hensley, and even like, okay, so Jake Myers, and then other guys just even cracking the bench, right? And then getting your opportunities when the time comes, because he's a switch hitter, which is obviously a little plus for him because he is providing it from both sides of the plate. Mauricio Dubon, they brought him in last year. He's a free agent at the this upcoming season. They could cut bait with some of these guys to provide a path for him, and that's without even injury. So before a Michael Brantley injury, knock on wood, hopefully he doesn't get hurt, there's then the lack of talent in some of these other guys like Myers and McCormick. So there are multiple ways for him to actually get a shot on this team, albeit that this team is awesome. Their weakest link is the outfield, and it comes in different manners, right? So mm-hmm. I mean, their best one, they don't even want playing outfield. Well, I guess Tucker could be equally inspiring as Jordan Alvarez, but you get what I'm saying there. Yeah. I think that that's a spot that they would like to slide over as well.
Mm-hmm. And then the last thing before we jump into the tiers is I just wanted to take a glance at some of the second half barrel rate leaders, barrel rate and average exit velocities, just to see if anyone stood out. I mean, obviously you have the usual suspects there, guys that go in the top 100 of drafts. But if you guys stuck out to me, and I think many people that follow fantasy baseball closely know this, but there are also a couple of guys that you may not know about. One that is very clear is JD Davis. Anybody that looks at his little StatCast card could see how much the guy mashes. But last season in the second half had the highest barrel rate in the majors, behind only Aaron Judge, but it was a 22% barrel rate, exit velocity of just slightly over 91. And he's going to be platooning there for the Giants, basically third base against lefty. So ADP of 412, he's interesting. Anything we've talked about this a little bit, but like the Giants in general, is Davis or Jock, sure. How are you handling these platoon guys? Are you just not drafting them?
Well, the thing is though, is we kind of call this entire team platoon guy, right? But then you think, I mean, how many guys can actually platoon? We don't carry that many guys on the bench, right? So some of these guys are going to have to play more often than air quotes, a platoon role. And I think JD Martinez might end up being one of them. They do lack a little bit of power. They continuously try to bring in guys. Who did I say?
Martinez. You good
and
too.
my own last name, and my last name is Davis. Yeah. So JD Davis, I think just for having the barrel rate and the power that he does, I think that that could potentially ultimately play out in his favor. I know that he's awesome against lefties and you know, potentially subpar against righties, but give him a little bit of rope and time with this lineup and age. There's health concerns as well, massive health concerns all over this lineup. So you can only platoon so many guys. And if you're healthy and you're hitting the ball hard, you're going to fucking play. So yeah, I like him.
And then one, two other guys I'll mention. One is a little bit, it was a little bit of a surprise to me, but Michael Massey of the Kansas City Royals, he had a barrel rate near 14% in the second half last season. Right now roster research shows him as a platoon bat, but they just traded a couple of guys there. Obviously getting rid of Mondesi opens up a little bit there in the middle infield. Michael Taylor's gone. So there could be an opportunity for Michael Massey. Probably just hitting the ball a little bit over his head, but somebody I may want to look into. And then the main guy I wanted to ask you about, and I've made jokes and this is probably wrong, but I've alluded to like, what is, I mean, is does he have access to like some good stuff that has completely just changed the trajectory of his career? But I'm talking about Trace Thompson, because that dude last season was mashing. If you recall, we watched a lot of Dodger games, but he had the fifth highest exit velocity, average exit velocity in the majors at 94 miles per hour, or just about that, and a barrel rate of 18%. And he was hitting bombs. He was squaring the ball. He was hitting really, really hard. And the thing about Trace Thompson is he is almost a different person than he was pre-pandemic. If you look back at his White Sox days, you're looking at barrel rates of like 8%, 5%. Exit velocity in the 88s. Now he's at like 12, 15% barrel rate and 92, 93. So, I mean, obviously, I mean, how does power come like that for you out of nowhere in your early 30s naturally?
God given talent, baby. And he's got it. He's agile. You see the, like, he's got like a little bit of length and limberness to him. He's 6'3", he's 225, he's got speed to him, a little bit of power and speed. He's on a great team. They have a top five park factor when it comes to home run factor overall. A couple things to like: good eye at the plate, 12.5% walk rate, that leads, which helps to a 353 OBP, albeit though he did have a 374 BABIP. Again, the power, 251 ISO, that's great. But there's the big problem of swinging and missing. So his swinging strike rate is well above average at 15.9%. And then his strikeout rate in general is 36.5%. That's a big problem when you're playing on the Dodgers. If you continue to do that, I think as time runs out, so to speak, you could find yourself on the bench. And that's my one concern with him, is that strikeout rate. But he does see the ball well enough with the walk rate to mitigate that just a little bit. So maybe that buys him enough leash to hopefully cut down on that. But man, he's had a pretty bad strikeout rate throughout his career. But that's the biggest flaw for him, really, is swinging and missing. And honestly, he's not doing a lot of that outside of the zone, so he's not chasing on his pitches when he's swinging and missing. So maybe there is a correction that could be made there. And if he is able to cut down on that, not saying he can, you could have a pretty good fantasy baseball player on your team going really late. But man, he's got to make better contact, right? Like 66.7% last year. That's, the league average is, you know, around 80%. That's not good.
Yeah. And there's an opportunity here, because we know that the team did not add a lot of pieces over the winter. And even my stance on Ohtani from this point last week, from everything I've been hearing, it almost sounds like, I hate to say it, but like the Mets are like the almost the even bigger favorite. We won't go into that. Let's keep hope.
Really?
Alive. Yeah. There's this whole thing Ohtani? About that's what I'm hearing. Cohen can afford it, and that's, they're going to make.
Well,
a
of
big
course he can afford it. The Royals can afford it. Let's not forget that. The A's can afford Ohtani. Okay.
Yeah. So we got an opportunity here for Trace Thompson to, I mean, at least out earn an ADP of 437. At least that's where he's at now. So
that's Vladdy. That's your last pick of a draft of where you're in the main event. That ADP is round 30. That's your shoot your shot, right? Shoot or shoot. And his brother does. So maybe he can, hit too.
Yep. It's in the blood. Talent's in the blood. All right. Corner infield tiers. We've got these grouped basically as like third baseman and first baseman together. Based on an article I do that basically compares where we are at in the market with these players in comparison to ADP. We're looking for market inefficiencies. And obviously, you'll start to see that that variance wider as you go later into the draft. Obviously, it's really tight at the top. And really, there are just four corner infielders in that first tier. And they're all great players with very little flaws. And obviously, you got Jose Ramirez, who basically is almost in a little mini tier of his own, because you've seen him go one overall in drafts. He goes five sometimes, or just anywhere in between, just a model of consistency year over year. You obviously got Vladimir Guerrero Jr., Bobby Witt Jr., and Freddie Freeman basically in the back half of the first round. If you're in a 12-teamer, you have a good opportunity to grab those guys early in the second round. But that is essentially your tier. If you don't separate Jose Ramirez into his own tier, that's what you got. When you're, I guess KDS, it depends where you are drafting in a draft. But first of all, are there any of these guys that you're avoiding, or are you keeping in mind stolen bases? What are you thinking about when you're drafting these
guys? That's kind of where when we're in these first couple of tiers, I think it's what we need to highlight is who are we not looking to draft, right? Because I don't think we need to spend time telling the listeners how awesome Vlad is, or Freddie, or Jose, or, you know, I think it's what I have highlighted is Bobby Witt Jr. That's what I have highlighted on the outline here. So let me get into somebody that is going in the first round on average. I cannot draft a player, especially when we've only seen 1 year of it. We've seen so many times before awesome players with high pedigree like this that could dip a little bit, regress, so to speak, in a negative way their second season. Whether that be from the opposing pitchers and what they're working on, seeing what they need to do to effectively get this player out. But in general, like I said earlier, plate discipline. So in general, 77.6% contact rate, 37.3% O swing rate. So his outside swing rate was the 20th highest among qualified hitters. And that's 20th highest in not a good way. In his 162 combined counting stats, so your runs and RBI combined, if you're drafting somebody in the first or second round, you really better hope you're getting at least 180 in that category. And you should hopefully be pushing 200 plus if your name's not Trey Turner, because of the stolen bases that that kind of help mitigate his return on value there. And then as a young hitter, right, that gets hot out of the gate, you kind of want to see that sustain itself into the second half. And he sort of cradled just a bit, 89 WRC plus, 145 ISO, 3.8% walk rate, led to a 288 on base percentage. And then just the power in general pretty much was sapped, 7.1% home run to fly ball rate. I get it. Somebody that can go 30-30 or 20-30 again, and you could tell yourself all that, but you're potentially getting an average batting average, potentially average in power. And for me in the first round, it's not above average or elite in the counting stats. I know that the Royals in general, their team context is getting much better, and they're going to be more explosive as a team on offense, but I'm not willing to just say, yeah, well, we need to tack on 10 each on each side, you know, and he's 180 plus already. So for me, when drafting in the first round, I don't see any other hitter that has all those things that I just listed as a con. So that easily just eliminates him for me. And when you are looking to invest first or second round draft capital, I think you do need to identify who you are looking to fade, or who is a landmine, or it just doesn't fit your roster construction or build or your evaluations. And for me, I'm adamant on that for me at least. So no Bobby Witt.
I have one team that I drafted him on, one of my 11, and it was just like a period of time in, I think, late December, early January, where, you know, I was like, you know what, I want to grab a slice because I don't think I'm going to have a lot of him at all, because I, I have no issue with Bobby Witt. Like, I'm not, I mean, this is a guy that can legitimately go 35-35 with 280 mm-hmm. this season, and we'll all be looking stupid. And sure. of course, there's the other side of the perspective where somebody was basically poo-pooing the idea that the entire industry doesn't feel like Bobby Witt earns his sort of first round keep, and are saying, what if that's last season was just his floor, right? Because he had struggled so much. Like, what if there's more to it? You got Pasquantino behind him for a little bit more, healthy Sal Perez. Like, the team around him is better. Melendez at the top of the lineup, MJ Melendez, the catcher. So, you know, maybe the something happens here really good with the Royals. Obviously, the home park isn't necessarily the best. Caps his, I guess, his 40 home run upside, which I guess would be something that would be possible. And say if he played for the Yankees or something. I mean, he's legit. But you're right. I don't necessarily feel comfortable with him there. If I've got like a, you know, just because the market is it was showing that he was like a seventh or eighth overall pick, and now that he's fallen to 13th, 14th, that doesn't necessarily mean that I have to take him ahead of Vlad Guerrero Jr. or Freddie Freeman. I feel much more comfortable with Guerrero Jr. or Freddie Freeman there with, like, you know, pick 14. If I'm having to decide between those two, what I have to decide at that point in time is how I'm going to attack stolen bases, because someone like myself, who is sometimes always chasing stolen bases, it sometimes is easier to just kind of take what you can with some stolen bases so that it gives you the luxury to not have to chase that category later on. So it really kind of also depends what kind of drafter you are. If you are weak and you don't want to chase too many of the John Birdies, the Esturi Ruizes, Jorge Mateos of the world, usually not a good idea. It usually does not end well. So in those cases, it's good to get somebody that can get you home, you know, power along with it. But still, nevertheless, something does not feel right to me about Bobby Witt as a first rounder.
I think this is, you and I both are kind of commonly known as lacking in the stolen base department when it comes to drafting players. It certainly has hindered us in the past, but I'm not going to go chasing waterfalls for stolen bases, man. Like, and maybe this is my year where I can get past 12th overall because the stolen base mitigation or whatever. But I'm slowly trying to become a little more cognizant of it, but I'm not going to totally alter my entire like evals for these stolen bases. I'm going to stick to my guns, and I want high contact, you know, I want high contact, good plate discipline hitters that can kind of sort of do it all. And if that comes with half the amount of stolen bases with a better batting average and more counting stats and more power, so be it. I'll try and piece together the speed. You know, sometimes it doesn't work, sometimes it does.
Second tier, we've got guys that are go between the second and the fourth round, basically picks like 16 to 45. And the early part of that is a cluster. You've got Manny Machado, Austin Riley, Pete Alonso, Paul Goldschmidt, and Rafael Devers, all essentially early to mid second rounders. Then you've got Nolan Arenado, basically kind of by himself there in ADP of 35, going in the middle of the third. And then first baseman Matt Olson, essentially on Olson Island, right now in ADP of 47. That's early in the fourth. He's a part of that masterful, beautiful Braves lineup that we've been talking about. Who stands out to you? Obviously, you have to have a late first round pick in order to be able to grab a Machado, Riley, Alonso, I guess, in the early to mid second. That's the only way it sort of works out. But among that group, which guys do you prefer as far as your plans for roster construction?
So I prefer Alonso over Goldie, just kind of to keep things clear and concise of the tier, because of the power, the younger age. And then when it comes to, I think the big one here, though, is Machado, Devers, and Riley. And with ADP, it goes Machado, Devers, Riley, 16, 19, and then Riley's in the mid-20s. I prefer Devers over Machado. I'm sort of going to dismiss that. You know, Devers was doing so, so good last year and then had this like 6 weeks of just ugliness. And the overall numbers still were pretty damn decent. But when looking at Machado compared to Devers, I think with Devers, you're going to get similar ISOs at 220 plus, and you're going to get the similar counting stats because of where they hit and how good the lineup, you know, the 1-2-3-4 surrounding around them is, albeit Boston is getting weaker. Devers does have the better park factor in terms of Fenway compared to Petco. And then age with Machado, now he's creeping into the 30s, whereas Devers is much younger. And then Machado, you know, we have seen years of these 270, 260, 250 batting average, right? And then last year he pops off for 298 again. That was on a 337 batting average, and his expecting batting average was only 264. So if I was having to put a 1v1 bet on who would have a better batting average, it would certainly be Devers, and he's just an accumulator as well. So having what I think will be a higher batting average and potentially everything else could be pretty similar. I lean Devers out of those guys, out of the three there, and then. Is that the end of that tier of those five?
Yeah, that's it. Okay. Yeah, that's basically it. The thing about Machado, I'm usually not, I don't know. He's just like I don't want to say he's just a guy because he's more than that. He's basically the guy that, you know, is going to get you close to 700 plate appearances and produce across the board. He contributes in all facets. He is amazing. The one thing that I do know is I want to get in on this Padres offense. Obviously it's not going to be cheap. Yeah. We talked about the Braves offense last week, but there's articles coming out today about Tatis and the shoulder and the concern there. But if you do have a healthy Tatis, who's going to compete with this lineup, and how is Manny Machado not going to like easily earn first round value if you're hitting with Juan Soto always in base in front of you? You got Xander Bogaerts in this lineup, Tatis, you got veterans like, you know, even Nelly Cruz if he gets a little bit of a bounce back. Like, this lineup is straight yoked, man. So like, I kind of like Machado this year. Finally.
Yeah, of course. I mean, second round pick. It's not that I'm saying I don't like him, but when we're splitting hairs, I think that we could see a 270 batting average. I think we could see another potential dip. Like, okay, with San Diego, his first year, he stole five bases. The next year he stole six. Then it was 12-9. So over the last two seasons, he's averaging double digits. The previous two seasons with San Diego, it was 5.5. So what if we only get, let's all even give him six. What if we get only six stolen bases with a 270, 280 average and still 200 and counting stats and 30 home runs? You're happy. But I mean, it's, you know, you start getting in a little bit of trouble there that early in draft capital because, you know, that isn't an elite batting average. Whereas like Freddie Freeman's going right around there. I think I'd like to bank on Freddie's, even his stolen bases and batting average more than him. Sure, the power could be a little bit less, but yeah, I mean, we can get that. So I don't know. Yeah.
Freeman Machado at the turn, 15, 16. Say somebody went pitcher, they went Burns and Cole. They're off the board. You take that pairing, two guys.
That's not bad.
Key lineup spots.
Sure.
It's not bad.
It isn't bad.
Anyone else in this? I don't know if there's, I mean, we can kind of, we have a lot of tiers.
You've drafted Goldie. You drafted Goldie recently in our four, honey. So, I mean, you're backing him a bit.
Yeah, I like Goldie. Of course I do. I think one of those guys that I want to get a little bit of a discount on him. I would love for other players to kind of jump up there in the middle of the second. And in a place where, like, say I'm drafting second overall and I start Julio Rodriguez, this is what I did. And these are the situations where I like him. I get a Julio Rodriguez second or third overall, and then Goldie slips to like 28, and I start Julio Goldie. I feel golden in that type of situation. I grab a pitcher in the third, and I'm rocking.
Well, here's how it might or could go is when we do see for sure Corbin Burns and Gerrit Cole become mainstays in the first round, that's going to happen. You know, maybe we start to see that other tier of pitchers start to rise. And then once that does, you could potentially see Goldie get pushed into the early part of the third round, right? Kind of swap spots with some of those starting pitchers. So, yeah, I don't mind him.
Yeah, he'll be a favorite of the old and boring drafter types. The guys that actually,
that's me,
ironically,
baby.
Well, they are guys that ironically do really well in the main event.
That's
he's their type of guy. So,
yeah, man.
Okay. Tier three, this in 15 teamers, this is round 6 through 8, which is pick 75 to 120. And there's one group that's, I guess, together, and we've talked about them before, but two of them are teammates, Alex Bregman at third base, and new teammate Jose Abreu, the veteran, and then Vinny Pasquantino. The three of those guys are basically, you know, you can usually get them in the sixth or seventh. People aren't usually going, you know, nutty over them. So there, you've got your people that really love Vinny. Then you've got your, you know, we've had discussions of this before, both on Twitter and on this pod, and an Abreu versus Vinny. It's a, you can make strong cases for both, you know, but you got those guys there. And then also, if you want to include guys in this tier that go a little bit beyond them, Nathaniel Lowe, who had that big breakout season hitting right in the middle of that lineup with Adolis Garcia and Corey Seager there in Texas. And then Gunnar Henderson, who I've caught some flack on Twitter for not having a super roto man crush on him.
Oh, no.
Gunnar is the truth.
You offended Birdland, dude.
I offended Birdland. Oh, yeah. I learned my lesson today.
Yeah, dude.
Don't mess with
they've
the O's.
They've got it. Dude, the O's have a solid fan base, man. They really do. They got a lot of good fans.
Yeah.
Surprisingly so. Yeah, I mean, you might not see it in the stands, but there are some truthers out there. Okay, the big part for me here is you have the Bregman and Henderson as the third baseman, and then you mentioned the first baseman in Vinny P, Jose Abreu, and there was one more, Nate Lowe.
Lowe.
Oh, it's Brandon Lowe. My apologies. Yeah, so Nate Lowe. Bregman. Just by looking at VD, I'm going to actually start with VDP. I'm going to start with your projection system.
Oh, I think
you. You have Vinny P out-earning Bregman as it is. Projections at, for Bregman, 90, 23, 87, 3, 273. Vinny P, 75, 25, 92, 286. Now, they have about a 20-pick difference, so about a round and a half difference in ADP. And I'm pretty adamant, if you even dismiss any projection system, that it is simply Bregman is going where he is going because of his position. And I think you should never get into that as a trap. It's a trap. Don't just say, wow, we've all tried. It's the third tier and there's no third baseman after Alex Bregman. If I don't get Alex Bregman, I lost my fucking leg. You're wrong. Like, and that's why he's going where he's going. It's people are telling themselves that they're like, whoa, after Bregman, you're done. You lost, you're cooked. And it's causing an inflation on him, and it's also causing a little bit of a trickle effect on Gunnar Henderson because he's sort of this younger version of an Alex Bregman, right? Doesn't swing outside the zone a lot, makes okay contact, doesn't strike out a lot, walks a decent amount, which we do like for young hitters. Doesn't have a good park factor, doesn't have a good team context. So with those guys, I think that they're going in this in a pocket that they shouldn't be going in, quite frankly. I think it's just they're better than the next tier, and we don't want to miss out on them, so we're going to draft them where we can, and I think that's wrong. So for me, I'm out on both. Now let's get into these first basemen, Jose Abreu, Vinny P, and Nate Lowe. I really like Vinny P. I'm not usually the guy that jumps in on sophomores, but when you got a walk rate that's higher than your strikeout rate and an above average O-swing rate, so he's not swinging outside the zone, 8.8% barrel rate, that could get better. We know with the size and the power that he could possess, I think that obviously in his second year that should get better because it's boding well with a 46.9%, very nice, hard hit rate. I mentioned that your projection system alone has you know, Vinny P out earning Alex Bregman by a couple of bucks. And then they have this gap in ADP, albeit a different position. But for me, the thing that really does stand out for me, Vlad, is just the pocket. I think it's a misconceived pocket of third base. And it's like, we've really have this tier of two guys and it's Bregman and Henderson. And that's the tier. And we've got to take them this early because it dries up. It's just, to me, it's wrong. It feels dirty. It's greasy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to say that the one thing is I don't want to make it seem like that also that Alex Bregman is like a bad pick, because I think there's inherent value in somebody that has been producing every season of his career, that was a former second overall pick, that happens to be hitting like third in one of baseball's best lineups around, you know, guys like, or second sometimes, or around Jordan Alvarez. Like, this guy is legit, right? He obviously, we know we're not paying for somebody that's going to hit 30 plus bombs anymore. That's not really who he is. We had those two seasons, or even that happy fun ball year, 2019, when he hit 41. It's not happening again. He's not really a 280-plus hitter anymore. Of course, he could hit 280 at any given point, but he's just nice and solid. If that's what you want, that's good. But he is kind of also very much like a Vinny P guy. He's on a short list of players like Vinny P, Juan Soto, and him, who have a higher walk rate than strikeout rate. He is a legit, real-life, amazing baseball player. It's just that, you know, if you really want him to pay off and, like, you know, greatly produce a profit for you, he really kind of needs to step it up on the home, on you know, give you something a little bit extra somewhere because he doesn't steal bases. You're going to want to get 30 home runs, or you need the 120-plus runs or something, or the 290 average that year. So that's my only problem with Bregman.
Your projection system isn't, like, cruel to him by any means. So, you know, I just want that to be known. I feel like now you're like, well, I got to kind of backtrack because I was harsh on him, but you really aren't. You're right in line for the most part with a lot of these other projection systems, and your 273 average for Bregman, it's 12 points higher than the Bat X. It's right in line with Zips. It's it's the same. Yeah. It's more optimistic than shit, the Bat X and Steamer. So, you know, I don't think that you're being cruel. I just think, and I don't mind Bregman. Like, he does have the profile that I possess, right? Like, that I love to, that's my kind of hitter. I just think it's because of the position he plays, people are pushing it up because they think things just fall off a cliff. And sure, maybe they do, but I don't think that we need to inflate things so much just because of a scarcity. This isn't catcher, right? I mean, mm-hmm. Like, it's not that much of a scarcity. So,
yeah. And let it be clear, at least how I feel is I don't think it's a big deal if you don't have a third baseman. And I mean, you can't have a great position somewhere everywhere. And we'll get into that as you'll see. Yeah. I think there are some third basemen that we can punt with later on. The next tier is tier four, rounds 10 through 12, picks 120 to 180 overall. And we're talking 15 teamers here. This is basically your group of guys with big power, light average. These guys can really hurt you in average. So I wanted to throw a bulk of these guys out here. I'm not going to name them all, but tell me who you like from this group just real quick, or who you may not like, your outlier, so to speak. You got me saying so to speak now. Rhys Hoskins, Christian Walker, Eugenio Suarez, Max Muncy, Matt Chapman, Rowdy Tellez, and Anthony Rizzo.
Okay, so Hoskins, Muncy, Chapman, and Rizzo, their pros are obviously they all have the power, right? You already mentioned that, but they all have the good team context with positive park factor and home run factor. And then you start to whittle in these other guys and it gets a little less, especially with like Eugenio Suarez and then plate discipline with him. So he, out of the entire group, is the one that I dislike the most. I'll put that out there first and foremost.
I agree.
And then
the guy.
And then the guy that I like the most, actually, I think it's Christian Walker. So I think he's getting a downgrade because of the park factor and then the surrounding or lack thereof talent that was there in the previous year or two. It's certainly getting better. There's like a conundrum right now of like, how good is Corbin Carroll going to be? And Jake McCarthy, look at his projection systems and where, like, Alec Thomas has nowhere to play because they traded for Lourdes Gurriel, like Ketel Marte by the dip. Like, there's a lot going on right now. Gabby Moreno could be pretty damn good right out of the gate. He makes good contact. So I'm kind of optimistic on the team context. So if we give him a bump in that regard and then just look at the player itself last season, 235 ISO, 122 WRC plus, a 242 average, which is slightly below average, but that was on a 257 XBA. So a bit of bad luck, I would say, because his BABIP was 248. And that's coming on a 44% hard hit rate and 11.5% barrel rate. Gimme. Like me some Christian Walker, man.
Yeah, and the thing, and we've talked about, I think we talked about it last week. I don't know where we talked about it, but like Christian Walker, it was supposed to be the guy that's to step in and take over for Goldschmidt, and he was basically injured for most of 2021, And people forget that he hit nearly 30 home runs. He hit 29 home runs in 2019, which is his first full season as a 28-year-old. And so the 36 that he hit last year was no fluke. The guy's got big power. He's a, you know, solid pedigree. And I think he hit something insane in the second half. I forgot what it was, but it was basically like almost 290 in the second half. He was just red hot. 235 ISO. So he's solid. And I agree with you. I like the team context. They're a lot better with a full year of top prospect Corbin Carroll. Ketel Marte is back and he's healthy. And you know, Jake McCarthy running like crazy. So yeah, I'm on board with that. One of the guys I'm sort of back in on, I had him really low in VDP, like maybe like 2-3 rounds past his VDP, and that's Max Muncy. And one of the reasons why is because we're in draft and hold season, where somebody like Muncy and everything he was dealing with last season with the, you know, the UCL and the elbow just had me worried. And obviously he had the down season. He hit like under 200. He was horrible last year. But this is one of only three guys, I believe, that has basically 35 plus home runs in three of the last four seasons, not counting 2020, obviously. So he's great. He's going to always get on base. He's going to need to be, you know, at the plate, hitting in the middle of that lineup. So I'm kind of getting in on Muncy. I want to see that he's healthy in spring training, and then I'll probably move him up a little bit more. And then I'll just mention, I haven't been into Rizzo in maybe like 5 years, but for whatever reason, with maybe, you know, the rules with the shift, the lineup, where he's going to hit in that lineup, I could see Rizzo just kind of being, you know, selling out for power and just being like a 35 home run guy out of nowhere this season, kind of, you know, harkening back to his good old days, even though I don't even know if he even ever hit 35. So I like him, and I like big bopper lefty Rowdy Tellez from Milwaukee.
He might have the most power. Him and Walker probably have the most power out of this group. Rizzo, though, dude, I feel like we could look back like this is now. So last year was his first full season with the Yankees. I feel like we could look back. I know he's getting older. He's 33. But like if we get like 2-3 more seasons as a Yankee, it's like that dude hit like 3 or 4 seasons in a row with 30 home runs with New York. Like, wow, he just kept thumping.
With the Cubs. Oh, you mean here in his 30s?
And his 30, he had 32 last year.
Yeah.
Which was tied for his career high that he eclipsed 2017, 2016, and 2014. Good team context, stay healthy. That park is made for him. Slight shift adjustments could bump up the really bad batting average that we saw last year. So before that too, we know that he can see the ball well. So maybe we can see an uptick in the batting average as well.
Yeah. And of course, and if you're drafting in like, you know, cut line and underdog and basically best ball and points leagues, like that's the kind of guy you want to go after.
Yes.
So, you know, good team context, good plate patience, big good walk call. Rate. Yeah. That's a good one.
Good call.
One last guy I wanted to mention in this tier, we didn't talk about him yet, but Ryan Mountcastle, he's one of the only Baltimore guys that I'm kind of interested I'm into this year. He had a stark drop off in power last season. He hit 33 home runs in his first full year in 2021. And then last year, in basically the same amount of plate appearances, he hit 11 less home runs. He hit 22. So, you know, kind of what the heck happened? Obviously, the you know, the ballpark dimensions changed and some balls that would have gone out otherwise, but he was just kind of unlucky. Basically had an X slug that was almost like 80 points higher than what his actual slug was. He was about 30 points lower with his average than his actual expected batting average. Yep. And things like, even though he hit less home runs, he was hitting the ball harder. Average exit velocity last season was 91.5. The previous year when he hit those 33 home runs, it was 89. So a 2 mile per hour average uptick. Barrel rate last season, 15%. Quite elite. The previous season, it was 12%. So you had an increase there. So obviously the park does him no favors, but maybe some of those lucky balls go a little bit of the extra few feet and get there. So middle of that lineup, Adley Rutschman in the mix, Gunnar Henderson. I kind of like Ryan Mountcastle.
Yeah, so if you have a 15% barrel rate and a 45.8% hard hit rate, but only a 13.3% home run to fly ball rate, something going on there. The pull rate dipped 6%, so he wasn't pulling the ball as much. And I think that we could see a little bit of regression in a good way because of the batting average as well. I think that you brushed up on the differential there, but it is 277 was the expected batting average compared to the 250 that he registered. Yeah, he's nearly got a 200 ISO for his career. The park differential, when they made the adjustments, it could be a slight factor, but honestly, like, I don't know how much we can weigh that in after one season when seeing 2021 data to 2022. Maybe we can cut those two in half and put something together there. And if you do get something in between there, I would be pretty happy with that, especially because outside of you, the people on Twitter that responded to your Orioles tweet do think that the team context has improved just a little bit. So maybe he does accrue more than 137 counting stats, which is, that's kind of where these players that are good, like, whoa, look at the barrel rate, look at the hard hit rate, look at the ISO, these metrics are great, even the batting average or the expected batting average and power, everything's cool, right? But like 135 in the counting stats, dude, that hurts. You know, you've got to, like,
yep,
that's kind of gets slept on a little bit, and the team context is hurting in that factor, especially because he did accrue over 600 plate appearances.
Interesting thing, by the way, in 2021, he hit two-thirds of his 33 home runs. Two-thirds of them were at home. Mm. Last season, you would expect that to be like a strong like road split. No, it was 11 homers at home, 11 homers on the road. Oh. And he hit 227 away from Camden and 274 at home. So just a couple interesting things there about Mountcastle. Last tier, before we close things up, tier five. So we're just talking about guys that go basically from where we just ended, like sort of 160, 180, all the way up to like 250, 260 overall. I'm just going to throw out some names here, corner infielders, first and third baseman. Tell me players that may pop out to you, guys that you are targeting in this range. You got the boring guys. You got Alec Baum, who doesn't hit home runs, Jake Cronenworth, who, you know, kind of does a little bit of everything, but is a better real-life player, Josh Bell on a new team with Cleveland, Ryan McMahon, who struggles against lefties, Seth Brown, who's on the A's, and then Justin Turner, who is, like almost 40. I guess he's 37, but anyone from this group, and I'll just throw in the position flexibility guys, the guys with two or three positions, Brandon Drury, Luis Arias of Milwaukee, Will Myers, first in outfield, now playing in Great American, and then Luis Arias for the Miami Marlins. So throwing all those names out, anyone pop out to you, targets or fades?
Okay, so the first thing I want to lay out here is I think that we need to focus on what is our need, right? If there's a team that's a little bit more needy for speed or power or average, or is it first base or third base, I think that obviously that's going to provide a little bit more of a whittling some of the players out to find who you really need for your roster construction and build. The guys that I don't mind that you mentioned, Alec Boehm, Jake Cronenworth, Josh Bell, those three I like at the top of things. I don't actually mind Brandon Drury. I think actually Brandon Drury is going a little bit later than he should be. I think there's a little bit of a discount there. I'm not one that's going to say he's a value. I don't know what his fucking value is. We have no clue what his value is. He hasn't had a plate appearance this year. So
can I interrupt you to warn you of something? Cause you have your cut line, your Beat Maddie League on Thursday.
Yes.
And I don't have any cut lines you've done. I've done three of those. People love, they eat it up like it's freaking candy, the three positional. I saw Brandon Drury go 55th overall in a cut line. So just FYI.
Yeah. So that's actually, we could actually have a whole pod on like strategies and game theory for the cut line. And yeah, that is certainly one of them. But no, if he's going to go in that range, the juice is not worth the squeeze. But the guy I like the most is Yandy Diaz, and I love him. I love him. I love him. I love him. I know you do too. Read some of your work in the past, obviously. And he follows the mold of Alec Bregman, so to speak. He's like Alex Bregman. He's like he's everything I want in a hitter outside of beating the ball into the ground. So last year, I'll try and do this as fast as possible. Yandy Diaz, 87% contact rate, was ranked 9th overall among qualified hitters, which was like out of 130 hitters that had, you know, minimum plate appearances to qualify. 23 Okay, it's 5.3% swinging strike rate, ranked 7th, 23.1% strikeout rate, ranked 8th. 296 batting average on a 288 XBA. First half, he only had a 0.096 ISO, so everyone's going to knock him on the power. He hits 50% ground balls, doesn't get enough, you know, in the air, right? Launch angle, etc. So in the second half of last year, we might have seen just a mini tweak. So the ISO goes from 0.096 to 170. The fly ball rate, albeit still putrid, it jumped 10%. So when it goes from 27% to 37%, we are seeing it's an improvement. Okay. And then the home run to fly ball rate, it doubled. Yes, it was only 9.7%, but that's coming off of a 4.3% home run to fly ball rate. He's potentially going to be leading off. He's one of the few players, like we mentioned for the Giants, you can't platoon everybody with this batted ball profile, his plate discipline. He's not going to just get thrown on the Rays bench for any reason. And if he's hitting at the top of it with some of the hitters, if healthy, like Wander Franco, I think that they could still cause enough chaos to score an ample amount of runs for Yandy. If there's just a little bit more uptick in home runs and power, the launch angle, right? Getting the balls in the air, stop beating it in the ground. I'm sure the nerds in the front office of the Rays are continuously working on this. It seems like we saw just a slight improvement last year in the second half. And I am a sucker for second half improvements, especially when it comes from a veteran that's been around the block, that has this sort of contact profile, this plate discipline. I'm taking my shot.
Yeah, my only concern, and I'm hoping it's not the case, that he gets some major helium. I don't think he's like some next year's Yelich. Sure. I don't think.
There's no speed.
Yes, but what I like about him is he's a player on the Rays that will not be platooned because he hits lefties and righties really well. He makes he's got an amazing eye. He gets on base. He walks a lot, and he basically played most of the second half atop the lineup. He's pretty much locked in there, and you're getting third base. You can pretty much, he's good for where he goes. If he starts to get like to 200, 220, then it's like, you know, he's kind of missing out on the value there, and you almost need him to just like miraculously hit 25 plus home runs, which I just don't think he's going to do. So yeah, I think he's like good for where he is. He's just a nice, solid hitter in that range.
Yeah. And one last thing too. So like, we've got Randy Arozarena going in the second and third round. We have Wander Franco, who is now getting real close to Dansby Swanson the closer and closer we get. People are buying the dip on Brandon Lau and potentially the power there. Harold Ramirez has really good contact skills and plate discipline. Aranda's on the up and coming. We know that they have a good farm system. I just don't ever want to look at the Rays and be like, that team context isn't good enough to produce fantasy value, because it can be.
Oh, I think they will. I don't know how. It doesn't always happen with the
sexiest
group of
names. We don't know how sometimes. Yeah.
It's going to happen. Those guys, they're going to be competitive in the division. They're going to score a bunch of runs. It's going to be with a bunch of unsexy guys and names. But yeah, somehow I think the Rays are going to get it done. Yeah. A couple names I'll mention. Some of the kids, Tristan Casas for the Boston Red Sox. Miguel Vargas, who, by the way, just FYI, is probably going to gain second base eligibility for the Dodgers rather early on, with Max Muncy playing third base. So a couple of guys there to talk about. So if you didn't get a chance, if you want to kind of go in deeper, make sure you check out the article at ftnfantasy.com/MLB. I wrote it. It's the NFBC positional tiers piece, and the middle infielders will be coming out this week. Maddie, that was fun. It was kind of cool going over those late round guys. I want to kind of like dig in now. I'm going to be big time rooting for Corey Jukes and seeing where David Peralta signs, I guess.
Yeah. And then to put one last smile on your face at the end here, I had two of these corner infielders that I liked after pick 250 and 350, my two favorite. After pick 250, as of now, today, using the 3 weeks of data for ADP, it is Yandy Diaz. And then after 350, it's Brandon Belt. So, yes. Hey, the whole podcast is on board right now. Choo choo.
Choo choo. Love it. Love it, man. That is great to hear. Stay healthy. Stay healthy, Mr. Belt. Right. I promise you an episode will not go by without us mentioning your name until you bring us to the Roto Promised Land. FTNFantasy.com MLB. You can use the promo code FTNPOD to get 20% off. Thank you all very much for listening. For Matthew Mattywood Davis, I'm Vlad Sedler. This is the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast with Matthew Davis and Vlad Sedler. Make sure to follow your hosts on Twitter at @_Mattywood_ and @RotoGun. Hit that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode.